Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Hi, this is Stacey Keach, and you're listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson and author guest Jim Rosen. Jim is the author of many excellent books on such classic television series as Naked City, Wagon Train, The Invaders, Peyton Place, Adventures in Paradise, Quincy, and Route 66. Jim's latest book, The Streets of San Francisco, a Quinn Martin TV series, is a comprehensive oral history of the streets of San Francisco featuring commentary from series star Michael Douglas, producers John Wilder and Cliff Gould, director Walter Grauman, and other key personnel of the streets of San Francisco. It also includes a detailed episode guide, behind-the-scenes photographs, excerpts from actual outlines of Streets of San Francisco's episodes, and a whole lot more. You can find The Streets of San Francisco, a Quinn Martin TV series, as well as many of Jim's other books by going to ClassicTVSeriesBooks.com, www.ClassicTVSeriesBooks.com. The first two seasons of Streets of San Francisco are currently available on DVD, and there is also an excellent website devoted to the show at streetsofsanfrancisco.net. Now, Jim, in our previous segment, we were talking about the camaraderie between Stone and Keller and the off-camera camaraderie between Carl Malden and Michael Douglas. And Michael, you're conveying what Michael told you about Carl's generosity to him as a young actor, which stemmed in part because, you know, Carl knew and Carl worked with Michael's father, Kirk Douglas. Do you think that dynamic, that generosity, was necessarily because he had a history with Michael, or would he have been that generous with any other actor, whoever the co-star would have been?
Well, I think initially it started off that way because here, you know, he said he walked in the room and he saw this young actor with a dimple in his chin, and I think he just saw a lot of his old friend Kirk Douglas in this young man. But I think a huge part of that was Michael. I don't think Michael was what you would call an egocentric person. He was willing to learn and grow and listen. And he's just a very nice person, Michael. He's a very down to earth and unassuming man. And I think that that all came into play. I think that was probably a strong part of the reason why Carl Malden treated him the way he did. And I think had someone else come along like Michael, that was prepared and energetic and enthusiastic and listened and had no ego that got in the way and was interested in getting the work done and producing the best result they could, I think he would have responded in the same way he did to Michael. Television, as you know, it's done very quickly. You have, you know, 7 days on the average to shoot an hour show, and the clock is ticking, and you're under a lot of pressure to do the best job that you can do in a limited amount of time. So it's essential that someone be really interested in the process and making things work and getting the results that you want. So working with someone like that, you come to appreciate them. And I think because of that, Carl had those feelings toward Michael, in addition to the other that entered into it. But I think he also would have felt that way towards someone else that had the same attitude that Michael did.
Which brings us to Richard Hatch. Now, it's very interesting. We were talking about this during the commercial break. When I first watched Streets of San Francisco in the 1970s. And I remember when Michael left, it was just after he won the Oscar for Cuckoo's Nest, and he established himself in the motion as a motion picture producer and soon to be a motion picture star. And I remember when they replaced him with Richard Hatch, even though they did a good job with the transition episode, to me, it just wasn't the same. Now, when I watched the show today, I feel a little differently about Richard Hatch. And even though it was a different character, he wasn't as bad as I first thought.
No, I thought Richard acquitted himself well. You have to understand something, that when you replace someone that's that vital mm-hmm. in a television series and someone that's established that kind of rapport with the lead actor in the series that Michael did with Carl, it becomes a very, very difficult act to follow. And you know, you hit the ground running because you're not starting a show. He was coming into the series in the fifth year, and he had really nothing to build on. And, you know, whenever there's a replacement in a TV series, you're always compared and contrasted to the original actor.
Absolutely.
And it's an uphill battle. I thought Richard was a handsome guy. I thought he was a very competent actor. He had worked in New York on a soap opera, All My Children, and he had done some plays off-Broadway, and then he had returned to California and done guest shots on a lot of the TV shows.
Including a lot of Quinn Martin shows.
Yeah, Quinn Martin really liked him and wanted him in the show. So he was a good addition, but I think there was a lot of pressure on him to succeed and to carry the ball, and it was very hard. I'll say this to you also, that what we just talked about, there was a very special relationship between Carl and Malden and Michael. It was very unique. And because of the reasons we talked about, that wasn't going to happen again.
Right.
No matter what actor you brought into the show, in my opinion. So when you put all those things together, no matter what Richard brought to the show, it was not going to be the same. It was going to be different. And it was an adjustment to make for the viewers, because you had 4 years of one thing and you got used to and that you loved, and all of a sudden there was a change. So despite that, I think that Richard and Carl Malden got the work done. They had a professional relationship, and maybe if they had had another season, that they could have built more on what they began to have. But the show was canceled, and it just, as you say, it was not the same, I think, for those reasons that I just outlined.
Yeah, but at the same time, a big word for me is authenticity. And you know this as an actor, Jim. You find something in any character you're playing, something mm-hmm. that, you know, you can identify with, that you can recognize, and that you can, you know, drawing from your own experience and your own particular skills, so that it comes across as real and as human-like as possible. And not that Carl necessarily thought about it like this, but because he had such a special rapport both on camera and off camera with Michael Douglas, it would have been phony. And I think he probably knew the viewers would have recognized that if he immediately, you know, just made that, oh, you know, with the Dan Robbins character. I mean, that it was something that you had to build on. And
that's a good point.
But at the same time, you know, Carl being a pro, you know, knowing it's a different dynamic. I mean, you started from scratch. And as I say, as I look back at the fifth season, there were quite a few good shows, you know, in addition to the Thrill Killers. There's one show with Barry Primus called A Good Cop, But, which it was toward the end of that final season that kind of touched on, you know, a cop who was revealed to be a homosexual, which again was one of those taboo subjects in the mid 1970s. But it was the kind of thing that, you know, Quinn Martin, you know, and, you know, Quinn Martin shows weren't afraid to address in the course of an episodic show. And so there are a number of good shows that final season. And it would have been interesting, you know, what might have happened had it seen the light of day for a sixth season.
Yeah. I think, though, that I think in the final analysis, the audience just didn't make the adjustment, and through no fault of anyone. And also, at that point, they had 5 years.
Yeah.
They had 119 shows, so they knew they had syndication. I think Michael said Carl was at that point was no spring chicken, and
yeah.
he might have been tired of the show. He had a tremendous work ethic, Carl Malden. You remember in the book, Michael talks about this. They would be, when they were in the next setup, they had time, downtime, they would be rehearsing scenes from the next show because they wanted to be on top of the dialogue and pick up their cues. And because they were so adept at it, John Wilder told me he was able to make the story a little longer. And it also sent a message out to the directors and the guest stars that came on the show, you better come prepared and know that you've got to pick up the pace because we're not whistling Dixie here.
Well, two things. One is it speaks to, Malden, we think of Malden, on the waterfront and Streetcar Named Desire, but Malden had a very extensive stage background. And so the one request he made of John Wilder was, if you can get the next script to me in advance, so I can at least go over it, prepare myself to the extent he could, given the confines of episodic television. So as best he could, he took a theatrical approach to his character from week to week. But at the same time, you talk about, directors or whoever came on to work one show or another, be prepared to work. They had to be prepared to work because Carl Malden immersed himself in every aspect of that production, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was, people like he and Jack Klugman were from the old school. And they were very, very involved in what they did. They were very well prepared. They were no-nonsense individuals. They took the work very seriously. And they knew their character in and out. The David Worf, who directed some of the episodes and was an assistant director for many of the shows, he has that interesting story, if you remember, where they're in the squad room interior, there's an actor in the adjoining room, maybe the third room back, and Carl comes up to him and said, "David, do you see that man in the back room?" He said, "Yeah, the one with his back to camera, yeah." And Carl comments, "Well, he played a heavy two or three shows ago. He doesn't belong here." David sent the man home. He was a background performer. He was not an actor.
Yeah.
So they had the facility to do that. But that was an example of what you just mentioned, what you just brought up, which is an interesting point. He was very much involved in
the totality
of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've talked about this on the program. I'm sure you may have run across one or two of these in the course of your career in front of the camera. But there are certain actors, when they're given a script, they only read their parts and their parts only, and they count their lines and stuff like that. Carl didn't do that.
No. I mean, it was his show, Quincy was Jack's show. They cared about the product, and they were very involved. Yeah, I think Michael told me at one point that actually Carl Malden had it in his contract that he must have the script a week in advance. And John Wilder, to his credit, always honored that. And he would get the script to Carl Malden at least a week in advance so that he could prepare. And it showed. I mean, they were able to shoot that show, start and work 6 days a week. They worked on Saturdays, and they were able to utilize the downtown area on Saturdays because there was a reduced flow of traffic, and it facilitated their getting things done. And, Jacques Marquette was very, very, very resourceful. He did the show the first 3 years. He had a good system down and shot with very fast film and could use a minimum amount of lighting and enable them to get into real-life locations without a lot of time consumption. and then took up the equipment and moved. In fact, Michael said to me at one point, even he and Carl Malden would pick up the film casing sometimes and load them on the truck. He said we were all in it together, you know, to make things go more quickly and move to the next location.
Well, it goes back to what you mentioned a little bit earlier, Jim. Even though Michael came from, you know, Academy Award winning pedigree, you know, with his father, and you know, Carl, of course, you know, came to the show with Oscar pedigree. They put their ego aside for the good of the product, and for the good of the show and the finished product. The episodes week after week were highly consistent. They were good quality, and you know, they drew you in for the viewer every week.
Yes, that was definitely a big plus. You know, listen, attitude is very important. It's very important in life. You know, it reflects on what you do and how you treat people, and then how people respond to you. And hats off to Michael. He really took the bull by the horns, and once he went to the next level, he was not content to sit back and wait for agents to come to him with offers from producers. He went out and picked his own projects to produce and act in. And at that time, in the late 70s, there weren't many actors that were doing that.
You know, he believed that, you know, sometimes you make your own opportunities, you know, and he certainly made the most of that. Hats off to Michael Douglas. Hats off to Jim Rosen. Jim is the author of The Streets of San Francisco, The Streets of San Francisco, a Quinn Martin TV series. Everything you want to know about the classic ABC police drama starring Carl Malden and Michael Douglas and produced by Quinn Martin. We'll continue our conversation with Jim after this quick timeout. You are listening to TV Confidential. Ed Robertson, hoping you're enjoying this encore presentation of TV Confidential. We'll be back with a brand new edition of the program next week.
Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or @TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay Area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.